From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 11th day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate has scheduled floor time next week to debate energy policies. Colombian officials in Washington are seeking a lame duck session free trade agreement for Peru. And the CFTC will release a report today that's expected to blame the high price of oil on an imbalance in supply and demand and not rampant speculation. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then we'll take a look at competition for government dollars as they pertain to the Land-Grant mission. At the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this in Chicago. The nearby contract for the wheat, September at 707 and a quarter, a half cent higher. December futures at 726 and one quarter. Up a half for the afternoon, and the March contract at 748 and three quarters, unchanged on the day. Nearby corn futures at 522 and a quarter, down a quarter. December at 533 and a quarter, down 3.5, and the March at 552 and a quarter, down 3.5 cents. May futures for the corn at 564 and a half, down 3.5 as well. September soybean futures at $12.16, up 34.5 cents, but the Novembers were down 2 at $11.76. And January futures at $11.92 and a quarter, down 2.5 cents. March futures, $12.06 and a half, down 2.25. Bean meal futures September contract, $3.50 even, $13.20 higher. September bean oil at $47, finished 69 cents lower. October live cattle futures at $102 and a nickel, up 40. December at $103.25, 22 and a half higher. September feeders at $109.65, down 20 cents. And the October futures at $108.57 and a half, down 32 and a half. October lean hogs at $68.62 and a half, $1.12 and one half higher for the day. December futures there finished at $66.97 and a half. December lean hog futures finished 80 cents higher on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. Nearby crude oil trading at $100.10, now $2.48 a barrel lower. November futures at $100.80, down $1.82 on the afternoon. October ethanol at $2.16.5, that's 3 tenths of a cent lower. Natural gas at $7.23 and a tenth, down 16 and 2 tenths. And the October gasoline, RBOB, at $2.75 even. That's 8 and 9 tenths higher on the day. October heating oil, $2.91 and 3 tenths. 1 cent higher for the day. And the propane trading, propane not trading, but the last traded at $1.60 for the afternoon. Gold futures now at $741.30, down $16.60. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 11,346. That's just about 79 points higher for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 80.19 is up 0.08 for the day.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Thursday afternoon, time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is on the line with us this afternoon. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, tell me about the marketplace and what happened in Chicago today, how the position squaring took place before tomorrow morning's report.
Well, I think basically you have to kind of sum up today's action as, you know, pre-report type action. I mean, we were relatively calm compared to kind of where we've been here over the past 2-3 weeks. You know, the market continues to liquidate, which is a big concern, as I mentioned to Dave earlier. I mean, until everybody stops liquidating, the market by itself is going to have a tendency to drift lower. Now, tomorrow's crop report might be a catalyst to maybe stop this liquidation process that we've been into basically since the June time frame, depending upon what kind of numbers they give us. I guess, though, I'm in opinion that in order to really do that, we almost need to have a shocker, game-changer type report, and I'm not too sure that's in the cards tomorrow. And it would be kind of something, you know, on the low side if it was going to be a game changer, kind of a shocker. USDA knows a little bit more about what crop conditions are here for September 1st versus then August 1, but a lot of the real information is not going to really be available for them until October. But I have heard some early yield reports coming out of this WILL listening area. And it does look like, corn yields are going to be down roughly 10% in this area. The only question is the areas that were down last year, they're up, and whether or not they're up is going to be enough to offset some of these the areas that we're into here, Todd.
Well, what would you call a shocker to the downside? If you had to pick a number on a national yield, or if you prefer to put it in total production figure, what would be a shocker?
Well, I think you got about 80 million harvested or whatever, so you have to say, okay, for every bushel drop, you drop 80 million acres. I would say if they would drop that bushel down to 150, that would be a 400 million bushel drop. That would take the crop down underneath 12 billion. I think that would be enough to stabilize the liquidation activity that we've seen in the corn market and begin to send a signal to the end users that this is enough, this is about it. So I need to start doing some buying. And kind of where we're at, the end users are just like farmers, but they're always looking for the thing to go lower, and as long as the thing keeps going lower, why buy? So you need to have something come into the marketplace like that, and then you'd have to have favorable technical action, and then you would maybe get the index funds to become back buyers again, rather than sellers. So you have to kind of, you have to give the market some assurance that supplies ain't going to get any bigger and supplies are tight, and that would kind of push people forward into the marketplace. And that'd be something like beans too. If the bean number would come in, things are already fairly tight on beans. If the bean yield would come in a bushel less, that would be a significant report to the soybean complex, too, and begin to maybe stabilize things.
I'd like to come back to the beans in just a bit, but I did make note that we're off not quite a dollar, I suppose, from the highs that came in late August at this point. If we get a number that's close to what USDA released in August, how much downside potential is there left in the marketplace for corn?
Well, corn, We can go right back to where we started from back in mid-August, which is that 505. I think there's pretty good support down at that $5 area. So I think that is probably where the risk is on corn. Soybeans, looking at the soybean chart, it kind of looks to me like November soybeans could fall back to $11 fairly quickly if you don't get something positive. Then we would, beans then would be kind of about every 50 cents down, you would probably find some support. But just look at the chart and the fact that we penetrated that mid-August low has kind of teed up a move down to the $14 area that could come fairly quickly.
Well, on the lead option for the beans, when we're you said $14 area, you meant something lower than that, I think. But
yeah, I meant $11.
Thank you very much. I thought you were going to make a lot of farmers really happy there momentarily.
Yeah.
The lead option was kind of interesting today. A 34.5 cent gain. The rest of the pit was off a couple of cents. Was that just because we're really short beans going into a late harvest season?
Well, right. That's the expiration process of the September option. And cash beans are just real tight to find. I mean, we don't have any new ones coming at us for at least 3 weeks. Oh, I know there's a load here and a load there. But anybody that tries to find any kind of volume of old crop cash beans, you just can't find that. What we're seeing here is probably some people buying September futures, going to take delivery on it, going to force the door to take delivery, and or if they were short, they decided they weren't going to take delivery, so they had to buy their way out, or they weren't going to make delivery, so they had to buy it out. So that's kind of the distortions that you're kind of getting in that September contract at this point.
Anything else before I let you go for the day? Maybe something on the USDA reports tomorrow morning or other factors?
Well, my guess is from what I've heard around the corn belt is I look for lower numbers. I don't know if I look for dramatically lower numbers. Like I said, I think October is probably the report that could throw everybody some surprises. But, from what I've heard on corn, I have to kind of lean toward a little smaller number here tomorrow morning.
Okay, thanks much, Dan. Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. If you get the opportunity, visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll want to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. If you do that this afternoon or before too late in the evening, I'll manage to get you on our subscription list so that you can get those numbers from the USDA delivered directly to your email inbox tomorrow morning. That all happens at willag.org. A bit earlier, I didn't get the opportunity to read you the forecast for the two-state region. Here it is from our own Ed Keezer. He says, tonight's skies will be cloudy. A few scattered showers, some thunderstorms. Lows will range from 61 in northeastern Indiana to 69 in the far south. Tomorrow, says Ed, cloudy, some widespread rain and scattered thunderstorms. Highs will range from 72 in northwestern Illinois to 86 in the far south. The extended forecast calls for more rain on Saturday, initially heaviest in the northern sections before drifting southward Saturday afternoon and evening. Hurricane Ike likely to make landfall in Texas overnight Friday and into Saturday. And that is a major hurricane. It still appears, says Ed, that this storm will seriously impact the Galveston and Houston areas. Flooding rain will likely occur in portions of Texas, Oklahoma, southeastern Kansas, Arkansas, and in Missouri. The heaviest rainfall likely in Illinois, Indiana, and southern Michigan and West Ohio on Sunday and Sunday night, says Ed. All from the leftovers of Hurricane Ike. The potential exists of heavy rainfall of 1 to 3 inches and locally heavier amounts for all of Illinois and Indiana, except for the northwest corner of Illinois Sunday and Sunday night. The rain will fall on wet soils following rainfall this afternoon through Saturday, so Ed says there will be some flooding. The American GFS model has backed away from a surge of cold air around September the 18th to the 20th, by the way. Toward the end of the model output, when the information isn't very reliable, the GFS does show a few surges of colder air into the Midwest, but it doesn't appear all that likely. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has scheduled floor time next week to debate proposed energy policies. On the House side, Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she wants to introduce an energy policy package yet this week. The proposal reportedly is still being developed from pieces of previously introduced bills. Colombian officials visiting Washington, D.C. this week are urging passage of the Peru-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, perhaps in a lame duck session after the November elections. Later this month, Colombia's president is making a state visit to Washington, and a key focus is expected to be the free trade deal. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission is releasing a report today, which is expected to say this year's spike in oil futures is due to supply and demand and not speculators running prices higher. Some lawmakers blame the oil spike on hedge funds, pension funds, and other speculators who invested billions of dollars in energy markets. Meanwhile, several Democrat lawmakers are endorsing a private report from hedge fund trader Michael Masters, which says index fund speculators played a major role in the run-up in oil futures this year. European Union lawmakers today voted to cut back the EU's proposal to require the use of biofuels. The vote in the European Parliament is a blow to a biofuels regulation proposed by the European Commission, which would require 10% of EU energy to come from renewable sources. Democrat presidential candidate Barack Obama says he will continue to defend renewable fuels, including ethanol. Obama says he will support the renewable fuels standard for ethanol. Republican nominee John McCain endorsed a party plank calling for an end to the RFS. The U.S. House has voted to end a pilot program giving Mexican truckers access to U.S. highways. The pilot project permits up to 500 trucks from 100 Mexican companies access to U.S. roads. The Bush administration has threatened to veto any bill that ends the pilot program. And the laboratory director of USDA's Agriculture Research Service National Soil Lab in Ames, Iowa, says global warming could alter farming practices and lead to lower corn yields. Jerry Hatfield, speaking at the Bio-Based Industry Outlook Conference at Iowa State University, says over the next 50 years, we can expect a 2 to 3 degree rise in temperatures, leading to a potential 4% reduction in corn yields. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at the WILL radio stations, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week. A couple of things to remind you of. Tomorrow morning, USDA will release that latest crop production figure. Comes out at 7:30 a.m. If you get signed up tonight for our newsletter, it's at willag.org. Just hit subscribe on the right-hand side of the page. We'll make sure that you get those numbers delivered directly to you in your email tomorrow morning just after 7:30. But you've got to do that tonight in time for us to add them to our list of newsletter subscribers over at willag.org. Just hit subscribe. The other two things that are happening beyond the crop production report, starting next Monday, this program on some of these stations will be expanded to a full hour from a half hour. In that second half hour, we'll be talking over the following month to a whole plethora of folks involved in agriculture, and you're invited to call in with your questions. We'll call it our Harvest Hour. That starts next Monday right here on most of these radio stations. And finally, thank you. Thank you so very much for listening. It means a great deal to Dave and I. If there's anything that you'd ever like us to change or add to the program, don't hesitate to call or email or contact us in some form. My direct line phone number is 217-333-9697. Now up next, The budgets at USDA include money to help land-grant universities to manage their threefold mission, probably something you already know. But did you know those funds, while not shrinking, haven't been growing? I'll have more with the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and how he sees the funds being utilized. Land grants, like the University of Illinois, are tasked with three duties: teaching, research, and outreach. Some of the funds to manage these tasks are included in the United States Department of Agriculture's budgets. To that end, the agency's head, Secretary Ed Schaefer, says there is much USDA can, is, and should be doing to help entice young people into agricultural careers.
Certainly, we put research dollars into land-grant universities, which not only allow them revenues to keep the doors open, but it allows opportunities for students to get involved. It allows them to pay stipends to students to go in and study to help lower their cost of education. So, you know, those things are important as we look at the land-grant universities. We also have intern programs. We hire hundreds of interns at USDA annually and pay them so they can earn some money to go to school. We get them the experience at USDA. They work with us. They work side by side with our folks, and then they, you know, again have some cash to help them go back and get into the university.
USDA, of course, has a vested interest in developing bright minds for agriculture. Some of those individuals stay on the land grant campuses and become professors or researchers or both. But the dollars they must chase to fund themselves have sometimes constrained the abilities of the land grants to do real exploration. The federal dollars have remained steady over time, but each year by a little less. It's a problem, Secretary Schaefer recognizes.
And what we're doing there with the difficult issues, because as the university's budgets have been strained, so have the budgets of USDA, and in fact, the United States government budgets. As we look at that, we're trying to move dollars out of earmarks so that Congress goes in and says, well, I want money in this school or for that program, because that doesn't give us the flexibility to get that long-term sustainable agriculture that you need to develop these programs. And so what our focus is to get away from the earmarks. We've removed them all from our budget. Congress is going to put some back in. But as we look at that, I think it's important to say this is a competitive issue. We need those grants to be competitive. We need people out there trying to get them. And the reality is, as much as the budgets in real dollars have decreased, it's because the projects, the numbers of facilities, the research directors have all increased to the point to where our dollars don't cover it anymore.
So either the land grants must find new sources to fund the teaching, research, and outreach missions, or over time, if the cash cannot be had, the competitive nature of the education business will force some of them to rethink the primary directives. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Tonight at 7:30, WILL-TV rebroadcasts the story of football legends, architectural pioneers, war heroes, and steadfast Illini spirit, the surprising history of Memorial Stadium.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. If you're wondering where Bill Mayer is on a Thursday afternoon, remember, he's moved on. We haven't replaced him just yet, but we'll get around to that soon enough. Talk to you in 2 minutes.
It's hot dog day. The first recorded hot dog sausage as we know it today was eaten by the Greeks from at least 850 BC. But the idea of putting a hot dog on bread dates to 1880. By the way, baseball and hot dogs go back to at least 1893, when you could go to Sportsman's Park and catch a St. Louis Browns game and grab the newfangled hot dog. On this day in agricultural history in 1898, Waldo Seaman was born, an American chemical engineer. His technical leadership led to the discovery of three major new polymer families: thermoplastic polyurethane, synthetic natural rubber, and oil-resistant synthetic rubbers. In 1859, Thomas Nuttall died, an English naturalist and botanist. He collected and studied plants around the Chesapeake Bay area in the U.S. In 1913, the official route of the Lincoln Highway was announced. It was the first coast-to-coast highway running from New York to San Francisco. And in 2001, the first case of mad cow disease in Asian animals was reported in a dairy cow in Japan. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about Ike.
Well, we have Ike is a strange hurricane. It's a strong one, but its principal characteristic is very large. It's covering most of the central Gulf of Mexico, and it's heading slowly west-northwestward toward the Texas coast. The interesting thing is that despite a very low pressure in the center, the maximum winds have not gotten up there because the winds are distributed over such a large area. There are hurricane winds extending out over 100 miles from the center, and so all that wind field is sort of moderated by the size of the area that's getting the strong winds. At any rate, the storm is heading for central Texas, and it will go into the Texas coast tomorrow evening or early Saturday morning, I think somewhere between Port Lavaca and the Galveston area. And then after unloading an awful lot of rain and winds, and I should say the winds, peak winds are 100 miles per hour, but most of the winds are averaging 65 to 85 miles per hour in the vicinity of the storm. The winds will die, but the rain and massive amount of moisture is going to get up into Texas and start to turn northward and northeastward. It'll come up through northern Arkansas, Missouri, right into the central part of the Midwest. And I think the showers we're seeing today dotting parts of Iowa and Illinois are going to be dwarfed by the amount of rain that's coming up through Missouri on late Friday and Saturday, and then right through the southern two-thirds of the eastern Corn Belt on Sunday. So look for heavy rains in that period.
So a giant lumbering across the Gulf of Mexico, and by sheer size will be dangerous, but not nearly as dangerous in terms of the power of the winds. But it will come along with a lot of rain, probably a lot of flooding, too.
Right. In other words, more people will experience tropical storm or minimal hurricane force winds because of the huge size, but much fewer people will see the really violent winds of the Category 3, 4 type storms. It'll probably come in as a high Category 2.
Tell me about this rainfall that might fall in the upper two-thirds or the bottom two-thirds of the Midwest. How much rainfall on Sunday could we see?
Oh, I'm looking for the southern half of Illinois and down into eastern Missouri and then over into Indiana. I think easily 4 to 6 inches of rain with locally heavier amounts. It's a tropical rain, and if the storm holds its circulation at all, that's what a storm is. Tropical storms, when they get inland, are just huge bundles of moisture, and they just unload it as they dissipate, and that's what's going to happen. And I think that's the area it's going to happen in.
Wow, that is a lot of rainfall, especially on top of a little bit of rainfall that we'll be receiving tonight and all night.
You know, when you're in dry spell and people wish for rain, it's that old saying, be careful what you wish for.
Well, we must have had a lot of folks wishing for a lot of rain, I guess.
Right.
We'll find out how that one goes. Will we get any cold air?
No, not really. The cold air is holding back at least for a week. It's actually going to be quite warm in the tropical air the next couple of days, and then it'll cool off to about normal or a little below normal the early part of next week. But the cold blast still isn't there, the one that everybody's concerned about in the ag areas. In fact, they don't want an early freeze with this late crop this year. And so far, we don't see one.
All right, Pete, thanks much.
My pleasure.
Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joining us here on the Closing Market Report. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.